Well, welcome back to It's Your Money with the investor coach, Paul Nichols. We are fortunate enough this morning to be joined by a very successful estate planning attorney, Alan Ugulis, who has a firm in New Jersey. Hey, Alan, you know, I thought what would be a good idea is to kind of share with the audience how we met each other. And I'd like for you, if you would, just to give a few minutes, maybe a little background on yourself. I think it'd be a little more impactful for people to get to know you a little bit. But we had met through Henry Zupko, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Great guy.
He is a great guy. Henry and I both have adopted the academic investment philosophy. We've gone through training together. That's how we met. He is an investor coach in New Jersey, and I'm an investor coach here in PA, but we've adopted this academic approach to investing. And Henry, I respect immensely, had originally hooked Alan and I up because I understand he works just recently. You guys partnered up and he's working in your office. Is that right, Alan? Are you guys kind of...
That's exactly right. And the reason, Paul, I did this is, you know, I've been practicing for over 20 years and I've been trying to find a good match because, as you know, it's so important that the financial plan and the estate plan are well coordinated, because if they're not both on the same page, it winds up, it might blow up in your face. And I've been searching for many years, and unfortunately, when I'm looking at financial advisors, many of them tend to be more salespeople than financial advisors,
that's
honestly.
Right.
And I was so lucky to find someone like Henry Zupko because, as you said, that approach, that academic approach, I mean, he's a coach. He's not a salesperson. He really, his role is to educate his clients. And
that's
I have
right.
never seen that in a financial advisor before, like I did with Henry and then meeting you.
Right.
And I think that's so critical because, again, you know, I see a lot of the financial advisors that are more selling. They kind of underestimate their clients' abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry doesn't. He knows he has smart clients, that if he gives them the right information through proper education, they understand full well why they're on the right path and the right goals. So that has been a breath of fresh air for me, knowing that I have someone with that academic approach that can make sure that the financial plan and the estate plan are well coordinated. And, you know, just as an example, of course, in the area of IRAs, why that's so critical, I don't know if your audience is aware, but I know you are, that IRAs, if they're not properly set up, can get taxed up to 70% between estate taxes and income taxes and so forth. So that's just one area we want to make sure the financial plan with the IRA, the estate plan are working on the same page.
Yeah, and you know, because of that academic approach, I know that the majority of people that come and see Henry become clients, because it's not the normal, well, we know best, and here's what you need to do, and here's your mixture, and you know, we'll send you quarterly statements. I mean, there's a whole ongoing educational process.
That thing I noticed about dealing, working with Henry, is that he really takes his time, as I said, to educate his clients. He's not in there to make a quick pitch or a quick sale. It's a process, and I really enjoy seeing him work with clients because he meets with them many, many times, and they really work hard together putting together a proper plan based on that particular client's goals, objectives, time horizon. So it's a very thorough, analytical, academic, but you know what? It's client-centric. In other words, he focuses on his clients rather than thinking he has the greatest advice and they should all come flocking to him because he has the solutions. It's really focused on what the client wants, what the client needs. And I just love to see that process unfold.
And you know what's really cool about it, more than anything, I think, Alan, is that we're working toward helping people achieve peace of mind, but we expect our clients to step up and do some reading and a little bit of studying and we want you to understand why we're doing what we're doing and how we're doing it, not just telling you what we're doing. So we expect our clients to take responsibility somewhat, a little bit, and start to get educated themselves.
Oh, I think that's so important, and you're right, because when the clients leave the office after seeing Henry, he gives them a lot of good literature to read.
Homework.
On exactly what is the philosophy and why they're doing things the way they are.
That's right.
And, you know, it's particularly important, especially in bumpy times like today, when otherwise panic might, be the onsetting. Well, you know, I see a lot of other financial advisors, and their clients are in total panic, and the phones are ringing off the hook and hand-wringing, and they're selling maybe positions when they shouldn't be selling them. It's the wrong time. Where Henry's clients, because they're so well-educated and so well-coached, they're not in a panic mode right now.
Yeah, you know,
they're staying where they are, doing the right course, staying on the path, because they know if the path is correct, that the goals are going to be achieved.
That's
and
right.
I just credit that so much to the educational process, that Henry takes that extra time to make sure his clients are part of the process and they understand what they're doing.
You know, it's interesting. I'd read before the opening monologue, before you came on, I pulled this off of the academic website, and this is from David Butler, who, Henry can get you this information. It's interesting. Net new investments to the academic strategies in 2008 was approximately $6.1 billion. So that's new inflows.
Wow.
A stark contrast to the industry experiencing over $355 billion in negative flows. Now, that's mind-boggling to me. What they're saying, Alan, is that the academic advisors that are pursuing this had $6 billion coming in, where the majority of traditional planning had $355 billion going out.
And that speaks volumes. That really does.
Yeah.
And I think it shows you that through proper education, the clients know they're doing the right thing. They're on the right path. They're coming to this. I think this is really a new dawn here of people becoming aware and doing the right thing for themselves. And it just, I tell you, the peace of mind, like you said, that I see on Henry's clients' face, it's remarkable, because I see other clients that don't deal with Henry. And like I said, they're in all-out panic right now.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're going to do, where Henry's clients know they're on the right path.
That's right. You know what, Alan, why don't we take just 60, 90 seconds and give the folks a little personal background. Now, you are from Jersey originally?
I'm sorry?
Are you from Jersey originally?
Oh, yeah. Born, bred, New Jersey. Went to a university right here at Seton Hall, and then Rutgers Law School. As you mentioned, after that, getting a Master of Laws in Taxation at NYU, because as we know, Congress, they can't keep their hands off the tax code. So you want to make sure your estate planning attorney is up to speed on these constantly changing tax laws. And it's funny how you fall into your profession. You know, somebody asked me when I was a little boy, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't think it would have been a tax attorney, a estate planning attorney. It would have been a cowboy or something. But it's just something so interesting that I found when I was going to college. One of my professors happened to be a tax attorney, a estate planning attorney. And I just thought it was remarkable. Here's someone, an attorney, who's actually not out there litigating, causing problems, but actually helping and coaching his clients. I said, gee, I could be a hero to my clients if I can actually save them tax dollars, protect their families, all their hard-earned assets and wealth. I mean, to me, that seems like a positive. I'd like to go in that direction. So that's really where it all started.
Are you saying that not all attorneys are ambulance chasers? Is that what you just said?
There's a few of us good guys out here with the white hats on.
Well, now, do you have children, Alan?
Actually, no, I don't. I'm engaged right now to a young lady who's, believe it or not, in her last year of law school right now.
Is that right?
That's right. You're fantastic.
Well, that's awesome. That is. Sounds like fun. Sounds like I'd like to be at that dinner table sometime.
It's fun. But, you know, of course, I feel like I'm in law school again because I get to go through and look at all the papers and the exams again.
So. Right.
But, it's wonderful. And, of course, my fiance Anna is going to be in the practice. So we want that real family feel at our law firm, and that's part of it. My family works there. Anna's going to come aboard, and we're going to get married, of course. And it's just, again, it's that not what you expect from an attorney's office. We expect, you know, oh, boy, you know, where's the bill coming, and what kind of trouble am I into?
Right.
Here, we kind of practice preventative medicine. Unlike other attorneys, you go to them typically when there's a problem and it's too late. We try to make sure that everything runs according to plan and there is no problems down the road.
Right.
That's our approach and that's our philosophy.
Yeah, we want to be proactive rather than reactive.
That's right.
Well, let's head back into the nuts and bolts here. We had talked about avoid living probate. Explain to the folks, what's the difference between living probate and death probate?
Yeah, well, death probate, what that is the process when a loved one passes away of changing title to the assets from someone that passed away to their beneficiaries. And to do that, again, you can't just do it on your own. You need permission, and you need the court's permission. So you have to go to the probate court and more or less get your ticket stamped. And so the probate process in itself can really be devastating if the estate isn't properly set up. And the reason is, well, probate can be expensive. When I'm talking about probate, let me just clarify. The technical aspect of probate, again, is changing title to the beneficiaries from the one that passed away through the probate court. But people tend to think about probate also as estate administration, which includes, of course, gathering all the assets together, making sure estate tax returns are filed, doing accounting and inventories to the beneficiaries, notice to the beneficiaries, you know, all that hard work that goes on to make distribution of the assets. So I'm just kind of lumping that together with the probate estate administration process. But if the estate plan isn't properly set up, the problem with this is, well, it can be expensive. There's going to be court fees, executor fees, accounting fees, and the big one, the probate attorney fees. And there's a couple of ways that probate attorneys can charge fees. There's two methods. There's something called the reasonable compensation method, and there's something called the percentage of the estate method. So the percentage of the estate method, it just says basically the probate attorney can take a percentage of whatever the gross value of the estate is. And so if you have a loved one that passes away, you call the probate clerk and say, my loved one was worth, you know, $800,000. What can my probate attorney charge? And they'll tell you the percentage. Now, typically, you see the probate attorney charge about 1% to 2%. You say, oh, 1%, it sounds so small, but think what that represents. That's 1% of something that somebody worked a lifetime to accumulate, and here comes a probate attorney swooping it up in pretty short order. So then 1% doesn't sound so small in that circumstance. The reasonable compensation method, well, again, if you had a loved one that passes away and you call the probate clerk and say, what can my probate attorney charge? They're going to say, don't worry, just the reasonable compensation. Well, what's that, right? It's a little bit nebulous. So that's one problem. And you got to think, too, you know, well, who's going to make this decision? But anyway, that's one problem we see if the estate isn't properly set up. The other problem we see, well, it can be a time-consuming process. I've seen probate and estate administrations go on for years sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is what happens if the beneficiary needs the money right away? We had a little snafu at the office recently where a son came to me. Mom passed away, didn't do the estate planning with me, and he wanted to close on his house. He had a date set. He was going to close on his house. Wonderful. The problem is he didn't have the money required, but through the inheritance through Mom, he was going to. Well, I told the mortgage company, don't worry. This is the only son, the sole heir. He's going to receive everything. He's going to have plenty of money for that mortgage. Well, I wrote that on my legal letterhead and everything. Wonderful. Thought, okay, no problem. Closing will go off as planned nice and smoothly. Well, it turns out the mortgage company wanted to wait till the son actually had the money in his hands, but we had to get through this probate estate administration process first. So it delayed the closing, more real estate attorney fees and closing costs. So it can cause a mess if your beneficiaries need the money right away. Another problem with this probate estate administration, again, if the estate's not properly set up, well, you know what? You could lead to multiple probates. So say you have real estate in more than one state. Most people are unaware. You have to have a probate in each and every state in which you own real estate.
Right.
So a lot of my clients also have maybe a vacation condo in Florida or something like that, someplace down south. Well, now we're getting a situation where we have to have a probate in New Jersey and a probate in Florida as well.
Right.
And that can easily be avoided. We talked about living trust before. That's another benefit of a living trust, is that if we set up a living trust versus the will in this situation, and we retitle the Florida property as well as the New Jersey property to the living trust, guess what? We avoid probate not only in New Jersey, we just avoided it in Florida, too. And you know, in Florida, the probate attorney can take a percentage of the estate, and regardless of any debts, liens, mortgages. So, for instance, say a couple had a vacation residence in Florida, beautiful, gorgeous one, worth $250,000, fantastic. But they had a $200,000 mortgage, which means what? They really own $50,000, right? The bank owns $200,000
right.
of it. Well, the probate attorney in Florida can take the percentage of the estate, what do you think, against the net equity or the gross value?
The gross value.
You know who writes the laws, the lawyers,
that's
right?
Right.
They can take a percentage of the estate against the gross value. They don't have to pay attention to that mortgage. But again, it can be easily avoided with the living trust, and that's one scenario where it would work out a little bit better than the will. The other problem we see with probate is you're not protecting your family's financial privacy. The reason is, once you file that will with the court, that's a public document. So you're saying, so what? My nosy neighbors can go down there and find out what's what. But the problem we're seeing now, it's not the nosy neighbor. We see these so-called predators and creditors going down to the courthouse. And you say, well, gee, why would they do that? Because now they know who's coming into money. They know who to prey upon now. And we see these con artists out there all the time with their scams and all their schemes. Had a person not too far from us came to my office, and his wife passed away, and one of these con artists came to his house because they found the will, found out the husband's by himself, and he was elderly at the time, and they gave him a phony stock certificate, believe it or not, worth $250,000.
Wow.
Gone. How are we going to find this guy? There's no way to trace him anymore. And people are always astonished by this, but think about it. When you see about all these famous people and you hear about their estates, how do you think the Hollywood reporters find out about it?
Right.
Because that will is a public document. And you can even go on, there's websites, famousestates.com, I believe, is one of them. We can find out what all these famous people did and where their assets went and so forth. So that's another problem we see with going through an improper probate estate administration. Again, it can be expensive, time-consuming. If you have real estate in more than one state, you have to have a probate in each and every state in which you own real estate. And again, it really does not protect your family's financial privacy. And this is what we talked about before, is that, you know, we live in a little more complex world than we used to live in before with this privacy and all these issues we have with our finances. So I think you want to take those extra steps and really do a complete estate plan to protect your family in these matters.
Yeah, in fact, when we come back, I want to talk about the difference between probate on the front end or back end, and or the trust versus the probate. We got to go to a hard break right now. We're listening to It's Your Money with Investor Coach Paul Nichols. We'll be right back after the break with Alan Ugulis. Welcome back to It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols, on this beautiful Pennsylvania Saturday morning. For those of you just may tuning in here at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, we have an interview with a very successful estate planning attorney from Warren, New Jersey, Alan Ugulis, who is somebody that I started working with in the last couple of months through a mutual associate that has the same focus we do, academic investing, coaching, and educating people as to what, for, and why, how. Alan, you know, we were getting into avoiding living probate and then death probate. And let me ask you this question. It seems to me, based on what you shared with me in a very, very, very generic sense, that you either, assuming you have a little bit higher net worth or whatever, you either pay to get the trust set up on the front end or your estate pays heavily on the back end probate. Would that be a very generic sense of what you said, either pay me now or pay me later, whether it be pay for the trust now or pay probate later?
You're exactly right. I think you remember that old commercial years ago, I think it was for an oil filter, pay me now or pay me later.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it boils down to. And it's such simple steps. I mean, it's really just a matter of getting your estate organized, because if you don't do it now, guess who's going to do it later? The probate attorney and going through the probate court. And think about it. I mean, human nature being what it is, if your estate's not properly set up and it takes time to get through this process and the probate attorney is billing by the hour, is there incentive to rush it through the probate estate administration process or to take their time and bill and bill and bill? Well, I think you know the answer to that one.
Well, I just had this happen with my my father-in-law, who passed about a year and a few weeks ago now, and she's still got one thing, my mother-in-law, that's still not settled, and that's exactly what I've noticed. I noticed a drag out. In fact, I had to call the attorney on a couple occasions and try to light a fire a little bit because he seemed to be dragging his feet, and after a few months, we realized what was going on. I mean, it was all intentional, for billable hours, you know.
You're exactly right. The billable hours, and of course, you know, again, this is the difference where, you know, some of my older clients, they don't understand that everything's so bureaucratic today. So even getting through this process with the best of intentions, when you're dealing with a lot of different institutions, it is a time-consuming process, and it becomes costly. Whereas you said, Paul, now if we take the proper steps, and get organized ahead of time, well, guess what? If you get organized now, then things go smoothly and go according to plan down the road. And what else my clients find out, and this is why I'm so happy Henry is there to meet with my clients for their financial coaching, is that most of my clients, when they come to my office, they really don't have any idea of what the value of everything they own is. They say, oh, I really don't need estate planning. I don't have an estate that big. But when they sit down and they finally add up what they have, they're usually kind of surprised to find it's on the higher end of the spectrum than they thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to realize, too, that what the probate attorney is going to look at, and of course the IRS and the taxing authorities, when they're going to see if they can get a bite out of your estate, they're going to look at the fair market value of everything a person owns when they pass away. So it's not what you paid for it. It's not what it's worth today. You have to kind of project out what it might be worth in the future, because that's when things are going to hit the fan and it's going to become complicated. And, it, you know, when we think about what our estate is, it includes everything we own. It's sort of like hot potato. If you own it when you pass away, well, then it's subject to this process. And it includes things like a lot of people don't think about, life insurance. People think life insurance is just tax-free and it floats right through. No, it's income tax-free. It's not estate tax-free.
That's right.
So we have to get together, and this is where I'm glad Henry's in my office, because he helps my clients get nice and organized and find out what they own. And perhaps not only get it nice and organized through the proper estate plan, but to make sure it's invested properly for the long run, to make sure it's there when my clients need it. So again, not only organized on the estate planning front, but to make sure the financial plan, the estate plan, they have to be on the same page, or it's just going to fall apart down the road. The wheels are going to come off the wagon, as it were.
They need to work in concert, what you're basically saying. Both the legal and the financial aspect, which is why, you know, it's so important to have the relationships like you have with people in your office that are dealing with the financial aspect. You know, that ties right into kind of my next area that I wanted to focus on, and that is, and we're talking about common planning mistakes or why estate plans fail. Let's talk a little bit about this reduction or elimination of the death taxes. What's your overall thought process in that area?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, Congress, you know, they with the legislation, they don't quite have their act together. You know, the exemption amount is changing over time. Most people think the estate tax our politicians promised it was repealed, didn't they?
2010,
well, you know, our politicians, they don't lie to us. It was repealed for 1 year, next year, 2010.
Right.
But right now, the way things stand, we don't know what Congress is going to do this year. But if they don't do anything and they don't act, guess what? That exemption amount is going to drop back down to $1 million in 2011. So what is estate planning attorneys? We call this plan, we call this the throw the mama from the train estate plan. Because if it's 2010 and mama has over $1 million of assets, you might want to give her a little nudge, because guess what? The IRS basically wants to tax half of it, 50%, if you're over that exemption amount, believe it or not. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you put D and IRS together, what it spells, theirs. And that's their kind of mentality.
Uh-huh.
And thinking about that, too, it reminds me of this cute story I heard the other day about our politicians and how they tax us. This little cute boy, Billy, 7-year-old kid, he went to the toy store. And he went to the toy store and he saw this neat red scooter. He said, oh, I just have to have this neat red scooter. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Everybody at school will think I'm the greatest. The problem was little Billy didn't have $100, and that's what the scooter cost. But little Billy, what he did is he went to home that night, he prayed to God, dear God, can you please send me $100? I have to have this neat red scooter. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And he prayed for a week straight, but he didn't get the money. But little Billy was enterprising. He said, you know, I'm going to write a letter to God. Dear God, can you please send me $100? I have to have this neat red scooter. It's the coolest thing. And he addressed the envelope, God, USA. So when they got it at the post office, they got a big kick out of it. And they actually sent it to the White House. And it wound up on the president's desk. When the president opened it up, he saw it. He said, you know what? I'll put $10 in here. I know it's not $100, but Billy will really appreciate it. And when Billy got the envelope, he hurried up, he opened it up, he was all excited. He saw the $10, and he did appreciate it. And he prayed to God that night. He said, dear God, thank you so much for sending me the money. But then he scratched his head. But I noticed one thing, that letter came through Washington, D.C. And do you know those jerks in Washington took 90% of everything that you sent me? So that's sort of like our politicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take away, they give, they change the name of it. And that's why you want to deal with an estate planning attorney who's up to speed on these constantly changing tax laws, because they might change the name of it. They might call it this or that. They might say they're going to repeal it. But we know what happens in the long run. We always wind up getting taxed somehow.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. They do change the name. It used to not be called the death tax. They called it something else. And
right, estate tax.
Yeah.
Then there's tricks they play with the capital gains tax on inherited assets. So there's a lot. It's a minefield out there. You really have to have some expertise behind you in this one.
And I would say that it's especially challenging right now because of that, the sunset provision on those tax laws that were changed. Like you say, is it going to go back in 2010? We're not exactly sure what's going to happen. But we do know that the way the economic environment seems to be at this point, that taxes they're going to be focusing on every dime they can scrape up, you know, to handle this trillion dollars.
Yeah, and you have to realize, most people don't understand that the estate tax, it's what it used to be called, now the death tax, it was repealed 3 times before. And guess what? It keeps coming back, doesn't it? So, you know, no matter what they do and what promises they make, you really have to keep their eye on them, because every time it came back in the past, there was what? Deficits and wars. So you have to wonder what's going to happen. And then you have to look at each and every state, because now what a lot of states are doing, because they're in deficit situations as well, they decided that they're going to enact their own separate death tax. So here in New Jersey, for instance, if the estate is valued over $675,000 on top of the IRS looking to get a tax bite, now you have New Jersey in on the game as well. So you also have to look at each individual state to see if they have a separate death tax as well.
And you start to look at what's included in that 675, and that's pretty much, like you were saying earlier, fair market value of everything you own right now.
Everything, the real estate, the life insurance, you know, things you don't get to spend, so you don't tend to think of it.
Like even furnishings.
I don't get to spend it, but yet that face amount adds to your taxable estate.
Yeah, and that's jewelry and guns and coins and...
All the personal property. You know what they like to do with our personal property, the IRS? They like to play the Antiques Roadshow, you know, that show on PBS? You see somebody come with a piece of junk table and you say, well, my goodness, what could that be worth? $5? Okay. Next thing you see it going at auction for $50,000,
yeah,
right? Well, they like to play that Antiques Roadshow with our personal property. So you're right, that gets lumped in there. Of course, the qualified money, the IRAs and everything, that's also lumped in there. So, yeah, it's everything, basically.
Well, and you know, here in central PA, we have a lot of farmers here, and we got a lot of people that, I don't want to say they're necessarily cash poor, but they're land rich. You know?
Boy, there's a big problem. You nailed it, Paul, because we have a lot of that, too, in my part of the state, and which is right abutting against Pennsylvania, is that we have a lot of people with farm property that's been passed down in the past, no problem, generation to generation. But now, you're right, now it's a problem because the liquidity issue. Because when are the death taxes due? 9 months after a person passes away. What happens if they don't have enough liquidity to pay the death taxes? You're right. We might have to sell the family farm to pay the death taxes off. And since you have that nine-month window, you're in that kind of fire sale mentality. Oh, my gosh. I mean, and people know that. And we all see these signs for estate sales when we're driving around. And when people are going for estate sales, what are they looking for? Bargains, because right. They know there's this nine-month window where these people have to sell the assets to pay off the death taxes. And so that's where, with a good plan, if that's the situation, one solution might be having insurance, but again, not in your own name because that just adds to your taxable estate, but setting up a very special trust to hold it where now it can pass to your loved ones not only income tax-free, but death tax-free. So now we have the liquidity to pay off those death taxes without having to sell the family farm. So that's one possible solution we have in that scenario.
Just to kind of review, and for those people that may just be catching the show or coming in, what we're talking about is common estate planning mistakes with Alan Ugulis, who's an estate planning attorney in New Jersey. And we talked earlier about trusts, and that there's all different types of scenarios and trusts that can be set up. But a lot of the things we're talking about now really can be handled with some form of trust or some form of estate planning. And it's not the huge McGilla gorilla expense-wise, as a lot of people think, especially when you look at what it's saving you on the other end, which is probate or a tremendous amount of aggravation. Which leads me to the next area or subject that I wanted to touch on. And we'll have a couple minutes. We may have to pick up on it after the break. But that is protecting a potentially vulnerable surviving spouse. This is one of the things that is of most concern besides income into retirement. But a lot of people tell me, what's going to happen in the event that I pass away for my spouse? So maybe you can speak to that for a couple minutes, and we'll go to break, Alan.
Very good.
How do we protect a vulnerable a spouse or surviving spouse?
Yeah, well, what we want to do, there's a couple of fronts. We want to protect them financially because lots of times, you know, statistics are that the men pass away first. So we want to make sure, and this is why I see Henry's advice is invaluable. He makes sure that both spouses are well-educated. And he also looks at the plan that what happens when one spouse passes away, is the other spouse going to have not only enough income to live off of comfortably, but is going to feel comfortable enough knowing they have input on how to manage the investments. Because lots of times in the past, when I was dealing with other financial advisors, sometimes the one that didn't handle the money was a surviving spouse, and when one spouse passed away, they were totally lost. They didn't know what to do. So again, this coaching and education that Henry imparts to his clients, invaluable in my estimate.
Just, well, you know,
invaluable.
I think of it as a stool, a three-legged stool. You have them, the client, you have the investor coach, and then you have the institutions that you're dealing with. There's really there's three parties that need to be involved for that stool to be stable. And you could even take it a step further for those with the higher net worth needing a four-legged stool, if you will, and that is bringing in the legal aspect, which is why we're talking, because, you know, it makes me think of these farmers. Here, these the parents of the heirs worked hard all their life. They were good stewards of their money. They made wise investment choices, and then they're getting penalized at death.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the death tax is. It's sort of a success tax, you know. Congratulations, you've done well. Now we're going to take it away from you.
It's ridiculous. I don't understand the incentive. You know, you'd think that incentives, I don't know, it confuses me when you start talking about taxes. But before I get too flustered and start beating up the mainstream media and the mainstream industry, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to come back for our last segment. Boy, Alan, we're not going to get to near what we wanted to talk about, but I think we've covered a lot of good areas. We'll be right back with Alan Ugulis, estate planning attorney extraordinaire, and we're going to finish up with our interview with Alan. We'll be right back with It's Your Money. Alan, you know what I thought I would do to kind of tie all this together? We've really been talking about common estate planning mistakes or what causes estates to fail, and we've talked a lot about trust and probate. But really, there's a list of things that I just wanted to read off and say these are things that are important to be handled, and these are the types of things that can be handled legally. And if there's any that you want to highlight on because of the limited time we have, please do that. One of the things that some proper estate planning or mistakes that people make seems to be protecting children's inheritance from divorce, lawsuits, and creditors.
Oh, that is a huge one. I mean, I think we all know that we're living in perilous times in America, that there's over 93 million lawsuits filed annually. In 2006, there was over 1 million bankruptcies filed, and you know that number's on the rise.
Yeah.
That the divorce rate, well, of course, we have the highest divorce rate in the world. So what we want to do for the children, we want to protect their inheritances, because today I see just as many inheritances lost, not only to excessive probate estate administration fees, the death taxes, and so forth, but when children get the inheritance through lawsuits or divorce, they wind up losing it. And so what we want to do is, one way to think about a trust, it's sort of like a tube of toothpaste. You know, once you squeeze that toothpaste out, it's out.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have the trust properly set up, we can protect the children's inheritance. For instance, say we have a child, they haven't quite found themselves yet. And we know there's potential problem. We know that if a child like that gets the inheritance outright, well, they're going to go right down to the car dealership, buy a hot rod Corvette, and the next thing you know, there's a car accident and there's a personal injury lawsuit. That inheritance is gone. Or if the child has problems with credit card debt, or maybe owes back taxes, again, if that inheritance goes outright with a child like that, it's gone. But if we keep it in trust, something called an asset protection trust, what we can do, and another name for it is a family century trust, what we can do is we can make sure that we have it set up so, yes, that child has access to money for things that are necessities, for living expenses and so forth, but yet, if there's a lawsuit or creditor problems, it's asset protected. Those lawsuit claimants, those creditors, they can't get their hands on it. But even more importantly today, even if we have a good child who's on the right track, I just set one up for a daughter who's a CPA, wonderful child, but they were worried about her husband. Lazy Jason, they called him, the son-in-law, an aspiring actor since he was 19. Problem is, now he's 35. And Susan, the daughter, is the breadwinner. Well, what we do for someone like Susan, the good child, we set up something called a divorce protection trust. And the beauty of this is we keep Susan, the daughter, in control because she can be the trustee of her own divorce protection trust that she inherits. So she can pull out everything day one. Of course, I tell her not to because then she loses that protection. So what I tell her is, yes, take whatever you need for living expenses and so forth. The rest, keep it in the trust because guess what? You have full control over it anyway. You can invest it any way you want, do whatever you want with it. But when it's in the trust, if there is ever a divorce, it's not like we're going to have half the inheritance go in a divorce proceeding to the lazy Jason, the son-in-law. So it's divorce-proof. But the other thing is, it stays in the family. It stays in the bloodline because it says if anything should happen to Susan, it doesn't go to lazy Jason, the son-in-law. It would go to her children. If there were no children, back to her sibling. So now it's divorce-proof. It stays in the family. So what we call this is a divorce protection bloodline trust. And in this world, unfortunately, I mean, I think that's almost malpractice not to do that for a child today when they get the inheritance. So that is a tremendous benefit. I can't overstate this one because, again, in my practice, I see just as many inheritances lost through excessive estate administration and death tax fees as I do when a child gets divorced or gets problems down the road, and it's so easy to protect.
One of the things that I notice with clients is this is a concern of theirs, that the inheritance goes to the kids. In fact, many of the clients would like to do some gifting to the children, I've noticed, but they're concerned about a divorce issue. So this certainly would address that. Is there a way to address gifting?
Oh, sure. But what we can do with gifting, again, these trusts are so wonderful in that they're so flexible, we can set it up in a so-called gifting trust, where when the asset goes into that gifting trust, yes, the child or grandchild has the use and benefit, but yet it's protected when it goes in that trust. And the other benefit is it's a wonderful way to create wealth. I see a lot of families that I deal with, they want to leave a nice legacy behind for the grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And Henry has taught me it doesn't take a lot of money. You think, oh, yeah, that's for the wealthy people setting up these so-called dynasty trusts or whatever. It really doesn't take a lot.
Pennies on the dollar.
Henry shows me with proper investing and the way it compounds that sometimes I set up a trust for a grandchild with a nice gift of $5,000, $10,000, whatever it is. And when Henry shows me what the numbers are growing to, when that grandchild is going to use that money, maybe during college years or to start a business or something, I mean, it's just tremendous. Well, you know, Einstein said the ninth wonder of the world is compound interest, right?
Right, yeah, the eighth wonder of the world is compound interest. That's right. That's exactly what he did.
So
I just read that
when
recently.
When Henry runs the numbers, when we set up these trusts for grandchildren, it's just such a fantastic benefit. It really is.
What about, and we're talking in the realm of estate planning mistakes and trust, protecting IRAs for stretch to children or grandchildren?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big one. Again, at the IRA isn't properly set up, it's a ticking time bomb. We've seen IRAs taxed up to 70%. You might as well just give it to the government at that point. And the reason is that the estate plan and the financial plan is not properly set up, that IRA is subject to potentially federal estate tax, the state level estate or death tax, and then when the children receive it, they have to pay, of course, federal income tax, perhaps state income tax. Between all the taxes, it could be taxed up to 70%. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that it's properly set up to take advantage of the exemption amounts that are available under the estate tax laws. That's very critical because, again, if compound interest and investing properly, it grows to such huge proportions. Could you imagine tax-deferred what it can grow to?
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling. So we want to be able to make sure we can take advantage of that stretch IRA so that when a child or grandchild gets an inherited IRA, they get it taxed without getting scathed with the taxes, and then they can take it out over their life expectancy. And again, I don't have to tell you, Paul, the numbers are staggering what that IRA can grow to if it goes down to the next generation properly.
Yeah, they are pretty staggering. What about, and again, we're talking about all the different uses for proper estate planning and what it can do for you in the pitfalls. Special needs. Now, I have a couple clients. In fact, I have Luke in my office who has a daughter who has some special needs to provide special needs trust for special needs children. Can you speak to that for a couple minutes?
Yeah, that's important because obviously we want to make sure we're so concerned about our special needs children in our family that we want to make sure that, yes, we can provide for them when we're no longer here. But again, if an inheritance goes to a special needs child outright or improperly, well, we blow any potential governmental benefits that they might be entitled to. But fortunately, there's a federal statute, and usually the states have separate case law that concurs with it, that if a special needs trust is set up properly, not only does that child get to use their inheritance and keep their inheritance, they also get to keep the governmental benefits as well. So this is a very common scenario. We want to make sure that we can have some peace of mind knowing that we've taken care of our special needs children to make sure the money's there for their use and it doesn't waste their governmental benefits. Very, very important.
And, you know, let's focus on this last one, and then I know we're getting short on time here. Providing long-term care insurance to protect the state from nursing home costs.
When you this is more to important today than ever.
Absolutely.
I mean, in New Jersey, I'm sure Pennsylvania as well, the cost is staggering.
It's unbelievable what it is, Alan. It's mind-boggling.
I mean, we can wipe out an estate in a couple of years pretty easily.
Yep.
Well, you know, before there used to be a lot of Medicaid planning, you know, trying to hide assets, transfer assets and so forth, which is fine. But my first option would be to look at a long-term care policy. And today it's more important than ever because most people might be aware of the look-back rule that mm-hmm. if you transfer or gift an asset out of your name that and you apply for Medicaid, they're going to look back a certain number of years
and
say, nice try, sorry, you have to pay that money that you gifted away.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a three-year look-back period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, of course, with deficits and everything being what they are, the government can't afford it as they used to, so now they stretch that three-year look-back period to a five-year look-back period. So doing this Medicaid planning, trying to transfer assets out of the name over a five-year period, that's a pretty tall order. So for clients that qualify, I would tell them first, take a look at getting a very good, solid, long-term care policy in place. And a lot of my clients like that because a good long-term care policy will take care of in-home care. In other words, most of my clients, and all of us, obviously, we don't want to go to the nursing home. Of course not. We'd rather have somebody come to our house if we should ever need that kind of care. And a good policy will provide that benefit.
Yeah, in fact, you know, long-term care is one of the number one reasons people are wiped out financially. It's also, and I've got an article here I will not get to this week, but perhaps in the next week or two, it is also one of the main reasons that professionals are being sued, i.e. Financial planners, accountants, and attorneys, for not recommending this, being sued by the heirs of the client.
Sure. I mean, and that's why, again, this is why I like working with Henry, because we take a holistic approach.
Absolutely.
And I know that's Henry. I know that's your mentality. We want to look at the whole picture. It doesn't do you any great good if, yes, we're doing well at the investments, if we're going to wind up losing it in the long run. So that's why we're at education and coaching. It's critical. It's the way you have to go today.
Well, you know what? We're drawn to the end of our time here, Alan. I really appreciate you coming on. Just to kind of recap what we've talked about, we've really talked about wills, durable power of attorneys, health proxies, HIPAA. We've talked about common estate planning mistakes and trust and avoid living probate, death probate, a whole myriad of different issues. And all of these are issues that are very customizable type things with people. There's no cookie cutter, one size fits all template to this type of planning. It's just like financial planning or medical issues. And that is everything's different and customized. Alan, what would you say to someone here, especially in my market? Now, I'm in Central PA. We want to give them some resources to get to you because we believe in your practice and what you do. In fact, the fact that you're on the show is our endorsement of you. What is it that we, other resources or information that we could give people to make them available to some of the nuggets and the coaching that you offer?
Yeah, well, if your audience would like, I have a website.
Okay.
And that website is my last name, which is rather difficult, but I'll spell it out for you. That is AUGULIS Law Firm. So it's Augulis Law Firm, one word, .com. And I have a lot of good free estate planning information that you can get off of that site. Also from that site, you can email me if there's any questions out there that need to be answered. But also, I have a lot of my professional colleagues in Pennsylvania. So if someone needs a reference to someone close to their location, then we can provide that for them.
Wonderful.
Or if they'd like to come to see me, that's fine as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go on that website, you'll get a lot of good information. You'll have a contact for me. Or you can reach me at the office at 908-222-8803. Because, again, just like you, we like to educate our clients. We like the public to know what they're doing. We like to take the mystery out of this planning process for the people in our communities.
Yeah, and we've been on your site, and we've grabbed a number of articles off there. Folks, there is a lot of information on Alan's site. So I strongly encourage you. I mean, we know Alan. We know what his practice is about, with the type of clients that he works with, very similar to our practice. I encourage you to check out, if you need some estate planning or some of these issues have been hot buttons for you, go ahead and go to his site. It's Augulis Law Firm, right? It's AUGULIS Law Firm.com. And then the number again, Alan,
908-222-8803.
Wonderful. Well, Alan, I want to thank you so much for taking time away from some fun stuff and other things. I know you're working this morning, but I appreciate you spending your Saturday morning with our audience, and I'm sure our listeners do here in Central PA. You know, we're Happy Valley, where Penn State is, and there's a lot of people in this area that like education. They want to get educated more, and they look to our our show for a weekly resource for that. And you certainly hit a home run for us today. We really appreciate your time and your effort. And if there's anything we can do moving forward, we'd love to do that. But again,
908-222-8803.
And the website is AUGULIS.com. Awesome, Alan. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Paul, it's been a real privilege.
Have a great day.
Righto.
This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach with It's Your Money. We'll be right back.